prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have great shows planned all this week. Towards the end of the show, I'm going to go through our schedule for this week's shows. You're going to be astonished by some of the great things we're going to be talking about. You won't want to miss a single episode. Today's show is going to be really interesting. We're going to jump around to quite a few different subjects. First, we're going to talk about estradiol and fear circuitry and the implications of gender differences and how that pertains to men and women. Then we're going to have Dr. Marion Nessel on to talk about Soda Politics, her new book. Really, really interesting discussion, I promise you. And then the last interview, Angle of Peak Torque and Hamstring Injury. For those of us who have suffered hamstring injuries, this is going to be a really important discussion, not only to avoid ever injuring another hamstring, but also re-injury. Couple announcements we have to make. First of all, of course, this is a new week. We gave away the secret word prize last week. We have a new secret word contest. You have to listen to the commercial breaks. When you hear the commercial breaks, you'll hear the secret word. When you hear the secret word, all you have to do is email it in to onair@superhumanradio.com and you are automatically entered. We're giving away Livon Labs products again. That was such a popular a prize last time. We're going to do it again. We're going to give away one of each, the lipospheric vitamin C, lipospheric glutathione, and lipospheric R-alpha lipoic acid. So listen hard during the commercial breaks for that. Also, we're giving away a free year's supply of Only Goodness Inside deodorant alternative, the only healthy good deodorant you should be using with none of the toxins and only good things in it. Go to superhumanradio.com. There is a banner ad to click and enter to win a free year's supply of OGI's wonderful natural deodorant. So let's get started right away. Let's welcome to the show Dr. Mohammed Milad. How you doing, Dr. Milad?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for being here. You are
Thanks
with the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School.
And correct. Yes.
Recently authored a paper looking at mechanisms of estradiol in fear circuitry and the implications of sex differences in psychopathologies, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Why? Why? What were you, haven't we looked at estradiol's role in anxiety and things like that? What made you want to do this study? What questions were you trying to answer?
Well, the basic fundamental question that we're looking at is looking at how the brain processes fear learning and, more importantly, fear control. So how do we learn to fear and how do we learn not to fear from, again, looking at how neurons do it in the brain. And so we, you know, for a long time, at least from preclinical studies, a lot of the research has been focusing on using male rats and trying to understand the circuitry behind fear learning. And very little attention or focus has been done or paid to basically females until a few years back when we were doing research here in humans looking at the processes of fear learning. We've noticed that there are different responses in how men and women learn to fear. And so we started looking at the underlying mechanisms, and what we discovered basically is that depending on where the woman underwent the fear acquisition and or fear learning phase, if you will, or fear extinction, where they are in their cycle, that's when the differences begin to emerge.
So we
started to suspect that there were effects of the hormones, basically.
And this is interesting because we've been talking about this a lot on the show recently, that in the past, most research has been relegated to male animals, whatever they are, rodents, pigs, mice, whatever. But the uniqueness and differences between the male and the female of the species needs to be better investigated. So this was kind of like going back and redoing some of that work, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, it's, again, a lot of the research is done for the males simply because the scientists want to avoid the complexity of the hormonal cycles in the animals, and you know, in animals, some of the animals cycle every day. They're in a different phase of their cycle. So it makes the, it adds a lot more variance to the data. So just to make it simpler at first, there's a lot of attention into just the male. But when you go into humans, you see really big differences. Even if you just look at the epidemiological data for example, anxiety disorders and mood disorders, you see that they're twice as prevalent in women relative to men. So it's an important issue that we need to understand.
You know, and we have a lot of female athletes in this audience, and many of them are very sensitive to, like, we have a lot of female powerlifters in this audience. These are women who exhibit great strength, but they monitor where they are in their cycle as it relates to an upcoming competition quite often, and they will, without really understanding some of the complexities that we're going to discuss here, they know when they're the strongest and when they're not as it relates to where they are in their menstrual cycle, and they'll actually choose competitions that coincide with what they feel they're going to be the strongest and at their best. So they are not crazy for feeling that way, are they?
No, they're not. I mean, this is first for me. I did not know that, so that I'm learning something here. But definitely, I mean, we didn't know until recently again that depending on where the women are in their cycle, their response to the experiments that we run are really different. And, so it's a very important thing to monitor. And this is something, again, in patients with anxiety disorders is something that has not been looked at. A lot of people think of, when they think of estrogens or estradiol, or they all think of them as just sex hormones that have no effect on the brain, but that's not true.
So talk about your research. How was this study designed, Dr. Milad?
We use something that a lot of people may be familiar with. It's called Pavlovian conditioning or classical conditioning, where basically you subjects, whether it's rodents or humans, essentially the same experiment, are exposed to a simple cue. In this example that we're doing with humans, let's just concentrate on that. Subjects are shown a blue light on a computer screen, and then after a few seconds they receive an electric shock to their fingers. That's a very mild electric shock. It's sort of like a static shock that we all feel in the winter. It's delivered from a small stimulator that's powered by a 9-volt battery, so it's not really, you know, hard or harmful or anything.
Yeah,
like
it has no amperage. It's just a voltage shock, and it discharges quickly. It doesn't go continuously.
Exactly right. Yeah. Just to have a second shock into the fingers, and the subjects select their shock level to be highly annoying but not painful. So there's no pain. It's just a matter of, you know, inducing a little bit of anxiety anticipation. So you see the blue light on the screen, and it sits there for a few seconds, and you know that the shock is going to come at the end. And we measure that anticipatory anxiety there. And then in some conditions, you see a yellow light, and you don't get the shock after. So it's only after a particular color of light that you receive this electric shock. And basically, if you're a participant, you're watching this on the screen, you know that when the blue light is presented, you will be receiving the electric shock. And if you're seeing the yellow light, you will not be receiving. So that's called classical conditioning, or Pavlovian conditioning.
Okay.
And then, so that's what we call the fear learning phase, where we teach you to fear, in this case, a blue light.
Right.
And then we teach you not to fear by showing you the blue light repeatedly without the shock. So now you learn, okay, at first, in the first day I came to the lab, blue light was bad. Next day I come back to the lab, blue light is safe. And then the third day, let's say we bring it back and we test your emotional memory for responding to the blue light. Are you going to be afraid or are you not going to be afraid? And we do this all in the functional MRI machines. We put people in the scanner, take pictures of their brains, and also look at the response and how the brain responds when you're learning to fear that blue light and when you're learning not to fear the blue light, and when you're also recalling that safety memory the third day.
And so when in the MRI, certain areas of the brain, quote unquote, light up when you are developing anxiety and fear versus other areas of the brain, which, or maybe they just don't light up when you're not feeling anxiety.
Actually, yes. So when you're learning to fear, there are certain brain regions that light up or they activate more,
right,
and other brain areas are turned off. And then when you're learning not to fear, it seems to be the opposite. So the areas that were off during the fear learning are now on. They're learning the safety, if you will. And the areas that are usually associated or activated with the fear, they turn off. So there are two networks, if you will, in the brain. The yin and yang of fear, if you will. So there are brain areas that go up and activate the fear responses that we all are familiar with, and then the other areas are basically turned off. And then when you're learning safety, you sort of do the opposite. You turn on some brain areas that are to basically control the fear, and then others are turned off.
So now you had to do this at different points within the menstrual cycle of these rodents?
Correct, and we've also done this in humans as well. So in women, we brought them in at different phases of their menstrual cycle, and we had them go through this paradigm either in a high estrogen state, mm-hmm. as in late follicular or late luteal phases, and we also had them, a different group of women, undergo the same procedure when their hormones were low.
Okay.
And then we compared them to men.
And so, what did you find?
What we found is that women that underwent the safety learning, if you will, the extinction learning, when their estrogen is high, tended to form better safety memory, so that the third day when they came back, their fear responses were much lower, suggesting that they had better emotional memory for the fear extinction or the fear or the safety memory. And that was associated with increased activation of some of the brain regions that control fear.
So wait, I want to make sure I understand this. So higher estrogen seemed to blunt the fear mechanism. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. In our experiment.
See, and this stands to reason, because I did a show probably back in 2007 where we looked at on the onset of perimenopause, and a lot of women complain about when they start going through menopause, they'll say, I just can't handle stress as much. And we know that estradiol blunts adrenal response. It blunts corticosteroid and epinephrine release from the adrenal. So you have a much more relaxed reaction to stress when estrogen is high, and when it starts to drop, the adrenals seem to kick in. So this makes sense with that there.
Yes, a lot of studies have suggested that estrogens seem to be anxiolytic, so supporting what you're suggesting, that again, that the higher the estrogens, the better the lower the anxiety.
Right.
But in some instances, some women actually don't respond always this way. So some, you know, they don't like estrogen. So it's not a universal
right.
Theory. Right. So there are cases to suggest that in some instances, estrogen can be anxiogenic, and that comes back to different receptors in the brain. And there are, in fact, in some instances, receptors in the brain that if you activate them, you can induce more anxiety. We have to be more careful in sort of having a general rule to say that higher estrogen always leads to reduced anxiety. It's not necessarily the case. But
I love what you just said, and I'll tell you why. Because in science, we've been so there's been such a high desire to find silver bullets and absolutes. And what you're saying here is, look, in a percentage of the population, this may be true, but in a percentage of the population, this may not. And that goes back to treating people as individuals as opposed to
right.
epidemiological studies that say everybody's the same.
Exactly. So
I
that's
love that.
Very
I love that.
Yeah,
I love
that's
that.
I mean, that's the nature of also science. It's not always, it doesn't always work in one direction. And it may be related to how many of these receptors the ratio of receptors that when activated to mediate reduced anxiety in some women versus in other, they may have more receptors of the other type that if activated to increase anxiety. They may be related to different estrogens. They may be related to the levels of estrogens and the fluctuations of estrogens, and not necessarily the absolute value. But where are you before the cycle begins, and where are you when the cycle ends? So it's basically how big of a difference you jump into that may be more important or relevant than simply the absolute value.
And that plays out very true too with a message that we've had on this show for a long time, and that is we look at individual hormones by themselves, but it has a lot more to do with relationships and ratios of other hormones.
Yes, that's something we're looking into.
Yeah.
Yes.
I want to take a break. I want to just briefly kind of touch on some of the research on male rats in this area for a second, and males and humans as well, if we can. Can we do that when we come back, just to kind of compare to what you learned in this study?
Of course.
Okay.
Happy to.
So let's do this. Let's take one quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Dr. Mohammed Milad. Stay tuned.
Not all so-called deodorants are the same. Only Goodness Inside deodorant is a multi-benefit deodorant that's not only free of aluminum and toxins, but provides the body with nutrients it needs, like magnesium, pure dead sea salts, minerals, and vitamins.
I am a big fan of Only Goodness Inside, the NGDO healthy deodorant. I'm a businesswoman. I have to dress up at work. It goes on smooth. It dries quickly, and it never gets on my clothes.
Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Only Goodness Inside banner ad to save 25% off your order today.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Do you want to take tennis lessons? You don't have to wear white or join a country club anymore. Play Your Court sends top-rated instructors to your local court so you can take tennis lessons right in your neighborhood. Visit playyourcourt.com/superhuman to choose an instructor near you and receive $10 off your first lesson or lesson package. If you have questions, call 301-575-6112 and be sure to mention Superhuman Radio to receive your first lesson discount. playyourcourt.com. Finally, a better way to take tennis lessons.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm. PhytoForm has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high-quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Muhammad Milad. We're talking about the relationship of estradiol, probably the most biologically potent form of estrogen in the human body and its relationship to fear. And perhaps this explains some of the fear sex differences between genders. So let's talk about men for a second, Dr. Milad. It was always thought that testosterone was the reason men tended to be more aggressive and possessed less fear, if you will, a part of our evolutionary gift. A book written by Dr. Milind Watfi that we did a show on in 2013, of Dove's Diplomats and Diabetes, talks about the relationship between fear, acquisition of food, and nutrient partitioning in diabetes. And I want to talk more about that a little bit later. But we also know the brain is kind of insular from the rest of the body, and as such, it has to produce a lot of things on its own. It was recently discovered that the brain produces its own insulin on demand. We also know that the brain has the ability to convert androgens to estradiol spontaneously through aromatization, as in the response to blunt force trauma. So is men, are men's ability to assuage fear really related to testosterone, or is it related to testosterone spontaneous conversion to estradiol in the brain when needed?
So we have not done a lot of work on this in men. We did publish one study in a male rat in which we blocked the aromatization of testosterone to estrogen in the male rat. And when we did that, there was an increase in fear response in the male rat. So it failed to extinguish or control its fear. And when we gave that male rat estrogen while still blocking the aromatization of testosterone to estrogen, then the rat recovered its ability to control fear or to reduce fear, suggesting that indeed the testosterone to estrogen conversion is necessary to control fear in the male rat. We have not done any of these studies in men. What we have done in men, compare them to women with high and low estrogen. And what we found is that women with high estrogen tend to show the same ability to control fear as those of men, whereas women with low estrogen seem to be lower to, relative to both the men as well as the women with high estrogen.
This is very intriguing. You know, we've relegated estradiol and estrogen for in general to the feminizing hormone.
Right.
But we fail to realize that, you know, there's research that shows that men given testosterone and men given testosterone and a powerful aromatase inhibitor like anastrozole.
Right.
The lipolytic effects of testosterone are lost when it can't convert to estrogen. We're finding that testosterone, when it converts to estrogen, as you point out, appears to blunt the fear response in male rats. We have really relegated these hormones into, you know, we've sequestered them into, well, this is all it does and this is all it does. And it's coming out to, we're realizing now that we've got it quite wrong in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we have to be careful with, especially maybe to your, to your audience if you take any androgens and you have testosterone and then you add fadrozole or any other aromatase inhibitor, then that be a little risk because you may increase anxiety. There's some studies suggest that there's an increase in anxiety, for example, in men who are treated for
prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer,
yeah,
right.
with androgen deprivation therapy, right.
Right, right. So we just need to be cautious with that. But those are just early studies, and again, we have not done any studies in men per se to test these ideas.
Yeah, and you know, Dr. Milind Watfi is a brilliant scientist from India who wrote a fantastic book called "Of Doves, Diplomats, and Diabetes." And one of the things that he elucidates in his book is the linkage between fear. The overcoming of fear, this is from an ancestral perspective. You know, we had to get hungry enough to venture out of a cave. Not necessarily a cave, but to venture out to find food because we may have become food. So it was only when hunger was surpassed by, or the fear was surpassed by hunger, that there was a change in hormone milieus in the body that partition nutrients different when you eat after acquiring food. And when we think about this, we think about the obesogenic nature of the population today. You know, there's none of this having to expend energy to acquire food. There's none of this waiting until you're so hungry that you must go get food. And we look at the obesity epidemic, and we realize that this is part of it. And I think that estrogen may play a large role in that whole checks and balances equation.
Yeah, that may very well be. I mean, I don't really have the expertise to speak to that, but that's possible. I mean, all we look at right now is in relation to control of anxiety and fear and how these hormones influence the circuitry that mediate the fear responses.
Right.
So it's something that certainly is worth looking into. But again, it's just the idea that we've always thought that testosterone and estrogen are just sex hormones and they're not necessarily having any influence on the brain. That's something that is no longer, that we should change that, that people should understand that those hormones do have influence on the brain. They have influence on mood and anxiety, and they have receptors in the brain and all these, dermatization happens in the brain and so on. So this is important.
What do you want? What do you want clinicians and lay people to take away from this most recent research?
Well, we're hoping to better understand how women control their fears, so that maybe in the future clinicians can have therapies that are tailored to women and where they are under cycle. We're considering the possibility of giving exogenous estrogens or estradiols in conjunction with exposure therapy, for example, for women who are diagnosed with anxiety disorders like post-traumatic stress disorder or other anxiety disorders. So this is something we're working on. We actually have ongoing studies now that we're giving one pill of estrogen to women, and they're healthy women, and see if that actually increases their the brain response in the safety network and reduces their fear. So those are things that we're working on and hoping that they can turn into something that would be useful clinically. And the other thing that we should also pay attention to, especially for clinicians, is to understand when a woman is exposed to a traumatic event, car accident or so on, we need to pay attention to where they are in their cycle and see if that actually has an influence in the outcome of the trauma, whether or not they will go on to develop, say, an anxiety disorder or post-traumatic stress disorder or not. So those are things that have not been looked at and have not been considered. And now that's something that we're trying to get people to pay attention to.
Very interesting. Very interesting stuff, Dr. Milad. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Of course. A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take one quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about soda politics. And it is an important discussion because if you listen to the soda industry, they are playing no role in obesity today. No linkage if you look at their research. Is this all politically driven? We're going to talk about this with Dr. Marion Nestle when we come back. Stay tuned.
This is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
If you take curcumin, you need to pay attention. The best curcumin on earth is metacurcumin. Metacurcumin is up to 277 times more bioavailable and absorbs over 6 times faster than standard curcumin supplements. Metacurcumin even outperforms those supposedly high-performance curcumin products. There's only one metacurcumin by Rev Genetics. You could save 20% off metacurcumin by clicking the banner ad at superhumanradio.com and use Superhuman Curcumin at checkout. If you want to help stop inflammation in its tracks, you need Metacurcumin by Rev Genetics today.
The secret word is resveratrol.
Email that in to onair@superhumanradio.com to be entered for this week's Secret Word Contest. And good luck.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
If you ever wanted to get bigger, stronger, and leaner in record time, September is the month to let Rob Ragish and the Blueprint Army help you make it happen. If you're not gaining, there's a reason for it. Stop wasting your time and head on over to CoachRobRagish.com, where there exists a vault of training, diet, and supplement tricks like no other. Act now, because the door closes September 30th. Visit CoachRobRagish.com today to learn more.
For the best in real-world, no-nonsense, result-producing, and effective strength training, muscle building, and physical culture information, read Brooks Cubic's books and courses. Don't delay. Sprint on over to BrooksCubic.com and choose from more than a dozen of the best books and courses on the market. Brooks Cubic's training advice has been building strength, transforming physiques, and changing lives for more than 25 years. If you prefer ebooks, look for Brooks Cubic's best-selling courses at Amazon's Kindle bookstore. Show your support for Physical Culture Radio by going to BrooksCubic.com right now.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Don't forget to listen for the secret word during the commercial breaks. Email it into onair@superhumanradio.com and you're entered to win this week's prize. Marion Nestle has been writing a lot about soda politics. Her new book is called Soda Politics. How you doing, Dr. Nestle?
I'm doing just fine.
Thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
The book is actually on our website at the bottom of the page. You'll see it at the bottom of the homepage, Soda Politics. Why this book now, Dr. Nestle?
Well, because in public health terms, sodas are low-hanging fruit. And what that means is they're a really easy target for health advocacy. And in the particular case of sodas, which have sugars, waters, and nothing else, health advocacy is doing a really good job. Soda sales have been falling for about 10 years. And in some social groups, nobody's drinking them anymore.
I know. People are really actually getting their kids. I mean, I talk to parents all the time. They're so proud to say, well, my child drinks water. And, you know,
right.
And that's a good thing. But, I mean, it's amazing because so many children still drink soda. And I think there's research out there that shows that just a single can of soda in a 24-hour period can shift blood sugar levels towards a more pre-diabetic way of managing blood sugar, right?
Yeah, by this time, there's so much evidence that habitual consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages is really not good for you. It's very hard for metabolism to handle. We never evolved to eat this amount of sugar in such a short time and absorb so quickly. What it reminds me of is the old glucose tolerance test used to take to find out how diabetic you were. And the amount of sugar that's in sodas is absolutely staggering, and it's hidden by the way the flavors and acidity work. So you don't realize how much sugar there is. And, you know, I'm fond of saying, you want to see how much sugar there is, get 10 packets of sugar and put them in 12 ounces of water, and look how hard it is to dissolve.
Wow. Now, those who would propose to sell us sugar-sweetened drinks or sugars in general have mounted their own campaign of science, and they come out and they say, I think there was one recent study that said, you know, that sodas are not linked to the whole diabetes thing. What do you think about that?
Well, the soda industry has been funding science for quite a long time now. And manages to get scientists to write papers and issue statements that obesity isn't about what you eat, it's about how much exercise you're doing, and sodas aren't harmful and they're not linked to obesity, and they don't make kids fat and they're not linked to bad diets in kids. And besides the information from the national surveys that demonstrates these connections is so flawed that you shouldn't pay any attention to it.
And so, I mean, in this day and age, I mean, I espouse critical thinking on this show because often the science contradicts what we know to be true. But those who would promote the science want us to abandon what we know to be true and go, oh, they must be right. But I mean, do they really think these studies that are funded by industries that stand to benefit from the results of these studies? Do they really think that people buy it, or do you? Well, I guess a more logical question was: do you think the majority of the American population buy that it's not linked to anything?
Well, I don't think the majority of the American population is tuned into the scientific issues in this. The science is complicated. I mostly read the professional literature, and I can tell you that the soda industry-funded studies are having a very big effect on the discussion that's going on. I'm finding that, in particular, the studies that attack the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey are widely reproduced, and the industry is very eager to promote those ideas. And the whole business of industry-funded science is something that I'm very concerned about. I think it's skewed and biased in ways that public health biases are really different.
So what is the solution? Okay, so if the right message isn't getting out to the people, or the people don't care, part of me thinks that some people want to believe those studies because it's convenient for them because they don't want to stop drinking soda. I have to believe that there's a large population of people out there who enjoy drinking soda, so they're going to always only hear the science that supports this silly decision. And you're not going to be able to change them. So what do we do? Is the population too stupid to care for themselves? Do we need some sort of campaign against soda, maybe from a more governmental level? I know Mayor Bloomberg tried to take on soda and it didn't really work in New York. What's the answer?
Well, I think that it's a combination of education and policy. The education is absolutely working among the educated part of the population. Let me say it again. Soda sales are down.
Yes.
And they've been going down for about 10 years. The soda industry believes that they're going down because of health advocacy, because of concerns about obesity, because of concerns about childhood obesity in particular, and that's the reason why people are resisting sugar-sweetened beverages and choosing beverages that don't have as much sugar in them, mm-hmm. at least if they know they don't have as much sugar in them. So that's what the industry thinks, and far be it for me to disagree with them. I'm looking at this as a really important example of successful health advocacy. That's why I subtitled my book, Taking on Big Soda, parenthesis, and Winning,
yes.
close parenthesis, because I think this is a taking on that is winning. Now, let me make it really clear. Nobody is concerned about an occasional soda once in a while in small amounts. Nobody minds that. That's really not a problem. It never was a problem. Sodas never became a problem until they started being sold in much larger amounts. When I was writing food politics back in 2001 and 2002, I had written an article a few years earlier about sodas in schools, and they were 12 ounces. And so I developed this whole analysis based on a 12-ounce soda, and somebody who read an early version of the chapter said, Marion, what are you talking about? Sodas in schools are 20 ounces. And sometime between the time I wrote that article and the time I wrote I wrote Food Politics, sodas went from 12 ounces to 20 ounces in vending machines.
Oh, my God, I didn't even realize that.
Oh, yeah, high school vending machines. I called a cousin of mine who teaches in high school and said, would you look in your vending machine and measure the size of the soda that's in there? And he came back and said, it's 20 ounces. 20 ounces isn't quite 12, twice 12 ounces, but it's close to it. And if I had one thing I wish that everybody would understand, it's that larger portions have more sugar and more calories.
Am I wrong? I'm 57 years old. I remember a 7.5 ounce can of Coca-Cola when I was a kid, and I remember even a smaller bottle.
6.5.
Okay.
6.5.
And I remember 6.5. Even a smaller bottle, that little tiny bottle that people wish they could get their hands.
6.5 ounces.
Yeah.
Oh, you can. I went to Coca-Cola World in Atlanta last week, and they give out 6 ounce bottles. They give out 6.5 ounce bottles. That's what you get for going.
That's amazing. So from the politics standpoint, do we have okay, so we're winning the battle from the grassroots standpoint. People are getting the message that they're telling their children, or they're not buying soda and bringing it into the home. They're getting their kids to drink alternatives, which juice is a bad alternative, but some of them are doing that. Is there more that the government needs to be doing? Should they be recognizing that this product is harmful to children's health and take bigger steps with it?
Well, that would be nice, but that's not how policy works in our country. Policy works in our country by grassroots efforts, cities, communities, smaller locations, passing ordinances and regulations, and then when there are enough of them, then the federal government acts, usually because the industry wants to preempt all these different kinds of rules, which it finds so hard to deal with. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing grassroots efforts to tax sodas in a lot of communities. Only one has passed so far, and that was in Berkeley, California, but they did a magnificent organizing job, and they are really a model of how this kind of thing should be done. They not only framed the issue in a way that really resonated with people who live in that community, they framed it as Berkeley versus Big Soda.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant that anytime the soda industry tried to do anything, it just looked like Big Soda exercising its muscle, and people saw it immediately. And the other thing they did was a great deal of community organizing, where they went into every single community in the city and talked to people about why this was an important measure, how it would help them, and how it would generate funds for very, very important social service programs in Berkeley. And that's exactly what it's done.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk more about this. We're talking right now with Dr. Marion Nessel. You can go to superhumanradio.com and pick the book up. It's called Soda Politics. It's a great read. Check it out. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Prime Nutrition is proud to present Max HP, their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date. Now available in two great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dye. Increasing blood flow to heighten anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high-performance athletes. Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today.
The secret word is resveratrol. Email that in to onair@superhumanradio.com to be entered for this week's secret word contest. And good luck.
If you take curcumin, you need to pay attention. The best curcumin on earth is metacurcumin. Metacurcumin is up to 277 times more bioavailable and absorbs over 6 times faster than standard curcumin supplements. Metacurcumin even outperforms those supposedly high-performance curcumin products. There's only one metacurcumin by Rev Genetics. You could save 20% off metacurcumin by clicking the banner ad at superhumanradio.com and use Superhuman Curcumin at checkout. If you want to help stop inflammation in its tracks, you need Metacurcumin by Rev Genetics today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's
world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Not all so-called deodorants are the same. Only Goodness Inside deodorant is a multi-benefit deodorant that's not only free of aluminum and toxins, but provides the body with nutrients it needs, like magnesium, pure dead sea salts, minerals, and vitamins.
I am a big fan of Only Goodness Inside, the MGDO healthy deodorant. I'm a businesswoman. I have to dress up at work. It goes on smooth, it dries quickly, and it never gets on my clothes.
Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Only Goodness Inside banner ad to save 25% off your order today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You, too, can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Marion Nestle about soda politics. Our new book, you can get it at superhumanradio.com. It's right there on the homepage, so check it out. So, getting back to this discussion, about grassroots efforts and so on, the soda industry somewhere along the line changed what they used for their source of sugar, right? They went from cane sugar to high fructose corn syrup. Does that play any role in this discussion? Because the Corn Refiners Association worked so hard to, make high fructose corn syrup seem innocuous and it's no big deal and we make too much about it.
Well, I'm not fond of the Corn Refiners Association, but I think they're right about this one. Corn syrup is sugar like every other sugar, and it's just cheaper. That's its main problem. The soda industry switched to high fructose corn syrup in the early 1980s because their taste tests showed that nobody could tell the difference in the taste, and it cost about a third as much as regular table sugar. It's still glucose and fructose, and it's the same thing, but it was cheaper. And so that enabled the soda industry to make larger portions and sell them at very relatively low prices. So in a sense, what's wrong with the high fructose corn syrup was that it was too cheap.
And I agree with you. Sugar is bad, and high fructose corn syrup is just another form of sugar. So I like that message. You know, it's not something special about it. You shouldn't be having that amount of sugar at all. There are some people out there that say, look, somebody has to fund this research. No one within the private community, at least, is coming forth and wanting to fund research. So industries have to fund the research themselves. What do you say to that?
Well, I think it's a real problem, and they have a point. Particularly when it comes to food and nutrition research, because the federal government really is very limited in the amount of money that it's putting into research. And when it comes to food and nutrition research, the Department of Agriculture's research budget has been cut steadily over the last several years. And the NIH has switched its funding to the role of nutrition in diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and that sort of thing, from the kind of basic research in nutrition that looked at nutrient composition of foods and, you know, how you absorb nutrients and those kinds of sort of basic-y research questions about basic nutrition. It doesn't do that so much anymore. So nutrition researchers have a great deal of difficulty getting their work funded, and that's a real problem. But food industry research funded research introduces another factor, and that is it changes the research questions. So if you look at industry, and I do all the time, when I look at industry-funded research, I'm not seeing very much in the way of basic research questions. I'm seeing lots and lots of research questions that are going to help the sponsor market the product, because there will be some kind of health benefit, no matter how spurious or how typical of whole categories of foods. So the egg industry funds research to demonstrate that eggs don't raise cholesterol level. The fruit, various kinds of fruits and nuts, fund research that shows that those have antioxidants and have an effect on blood pressure or whatever. Those are different research questions.
Interesting.
And I think, and it's not that the people who take this money are corrupt. It's much more complicated than that. There's an enormous literature on conflict of interest, and that literature shows that the people who take industry money are completely unaware of any conflict. They don't think that there's going to be a conflict. They think they're going to be completely independent. And if you ask them, they say they're completely independent. It's just that the results of their studies come out almost invariably favorable to the industry sponsor. And it's completely unconscious. That's what makes it so difficult to deal with.
Soda, the soda industry focuses on children. We've had other industries that focus on children kind of get their hands slapped. Is it time to do that with the soda industry?
The soda industry will tell you that they have not advertised to children on children's television programs for decades. And that's true. They market to children in other, much more subtle ways. And that's much, much harder for them to stop. You look at children's television, children's cartoons programs, there are no Coca-Cola ads
right.
on those. And there haven't been for, they tell me, 50 years. I take them at face value. And a Coca-Cola marketing executive who left the company and is now making up for what he calls his karmic debt in marketing things to children says that the soda industry really doesn't deliberately market to children under the age of 12. Well, maybe not, but I went to Coca-Cola, World of Coca-Cola in Atlanta last week and saw lots and lots of toys that looked to me like they were for children under the age of 12.
Yeah.
Lots of them. And in talking to parents who were buying Coca-Cola items from the store, we asked them what they were going to do with those items, and they said, well, we're going to give them to our kids.
Interesting.
They were little kids.
Yeah, right, of course. So who is Big Soda? You have a chapter dedicated to who is Big Soda. Who is Big Soda?
Oh, it's Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, and Dr. Pepper Snapple, and really, it's Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. They so dominate the industry that you don't really need to talk about anybody else. The rest of the industry is lots and lots and lots of very, very small soda companies.
And they're of no consequence. They're just kind of riding the wave that is created by Coca-Cola and PepsiCo.
They ride the wave, and presumably they get, and depending on how big their health aura is, and many of them market their products as more healthful than either Coke or Pepsi, but you have to read the labels to see how much sugar is in them.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I want to go ahead and take our next commercial break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk more about some other things that I find in your newsletter from time to time that I think the audience will be very interested in. We're talking with Dr. Marion Nestle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Bluebird Botanicals sources only the highest quality CBD extracts from hemp. CBD is a non-psychoactive, all-natural constituent used to bolster general health. Bluebird Botanicals performs third-party testing, has invested in state-of-the-art manufacturing equipment, delivers nationwide, and possesses industry-leading customer service. To get CBD delivered to your front door, go to superhumanradio.com, click the Bluebird Botanicals banner ad, and save 25% off with code SHR25. Bluebird Botanicals, setting the standard for CBD oil and extracts.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Do you want to take tennis lessons? You don't have to wear white or join a country club anymore. Play Your Court sends top-rated instructors to your local court so you can take tennis lessons right in your neighborhood. Visit playyourcourt.com/superhuman to choose an instructor near you and receive $10 off your first lesson or lesson package. If you have questions, call 301-575-6112 and be sure to mention Superhuman Radio to receive your first lesson discount. PlayYourCourt.com. Finally, a better way to take tennis lessons.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
You drink coffee, but do you know what's in your coffee? Pesticides, herbicides, unhealthy molds, and bacteria. That's unless you drink Nutra Cafe. Nutra Cafe is small batch, certified organic Arabica whole bean gourmet coffee that's infused with an immune-supporting medicinal mushroom blend. Nutra Cafe tastes amazing because it's low acid, and it doesn't cost any more to drink the world's best coffee. Roasted fresh every week in small batches. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Nutra Cafe banner ad to learn more. There's only one Nutra Cafe organic medicinal coffee in the world. Why would you drink anything else?
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Yo, mic check, mic check.
Yeah, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Marion Nestle. I love what Marion Nestle does because she does not appear like a zealot, which usually diffuses the message. She lays the facts out scientifically, and it's refreshing because most of the time we have people that are being accused of being more zealot-like, and it loses the importance of the message. I'd like to talk about cocoflavonoids for a moment. Can we talk about that?
Sure.
You have a.
I can't help but laugh.
Why? Sorry. Tell me why.
Oh, because of what the Mars company is doing about promoting cocoa as a health food.
I did that show. I actually had the scientists on the show that did the research that the 3.5 grams or I think it was 13 grams of what is considered non-Dutch chocolate, which is not heated. So the flavonoids or flavanols are intact, and how it helps endothelial walls of the arteries. And little did I, and you know, we're usually really good about looking for who funds studies. I booked this one myself. I failed to do the research. So during the interview, the scientists came forth and said that Mars funded this study. And I really felt stupid, Marion. I've been doing this 10 years. I'm usually good about this. We try to navigate around the stuff that shouldn't be taken with the same amount of gravity because it's funded from an industry trying to capitalize on something. And so
I don't think you should feel bad about it at all. Mars had a full-page ad in the New York Times advertising the results of one of these studies, and nowhere on it did it say that Mars had paid for the ad. It said that Cocovia paid for the ad.
Uh-huh.
And unless you knew that Mars owned Cocovia, how would you know?
Yeah, you're right. And I felt a little silly, but then it came out during the interview that Mars is working on coming out with the specific bar that will deliver the exact amount used in the study that promoted healthy arteries in these individuals, and they're going to market it, you know, one a day kind of approach, you know, like the one a day vitamin.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant marketing.
Yeah, science. Well, you know, you publish a study and then you come out with the product on the heels of it. You're brilliant, right?
Well, that's the purpose of the whole study, and that was such a good example of it because they came out with a press release, and then they came out with this full-page ad. And Cocovia has, they say that it has a special process that preserves the flavanols. Usually flavanols are destroyed in the production of chocolate, in the general making of chocolate candy. You don't get much flavanol left in the chocolate.
Right.
But they claim they have a process that preserves it. Maybe they do. I find the chocolate horribly bitter. If anything needed sugar, it was that. But I like a sweet. I like a sweeter chocolate. What can I say?
But what I learned from the research was that it's anyone can produce this chocolate. It's called non-Dutch chocolate, and the cocoa is simply never heated in any of the processes. That is where the flavanols are denatured and lost. And so this assumption that they have the only method that preserves these flavanols is nonsense. Non-Dutch chocolate has been around for a long time. In fact, dates back to Aztec and Mayans who used cocoa powder like currency, that they believed, they learned early on that when you heated it in the processing, it wasn't the same, it didn't do the same beneficial things for health that it did when it was non-heated. So if they can't lay claim to it, they'd have to go back to Mayan and Aztec people, and they were the ones who actually discovered it. We just kind of figured out what was going on, why they felt that way. So
yeah, but the Aztecs didn't advertise in the New York Times.
Yeah, there you go. So Mars is coming out. Mars is promoting. They own Cocovia. They promoted this in the New York Times. So what are people to do? I mean, these, you know, even CNN, I don't know if you're aware of this, but CNN announced a few months ago, we talked about it on the show, that they're coming out with a new platform that's designed to do more infomercial-like ads. I think they call it CNN Studio. And they're going to do like, they will appear like stories, like coverage, but they will be funded by, paid by their sponsors to present stories in a light that you think is news, but it's actually an advertisement. So they're going to come out with their own infomercials very shortly.
Well, I hope it's going to be very clearly labeled. I mean, it's really a let the buyer beware kind of situation. Kind of amazing. This is because there just isn't enough money, I guess, for these companies to survive, and everybody is desperate for money. I know in talking to officers of the Nutrition Society that I belong to, the American Society for Nutrition, which is a society of people who do research on nutrition, mostly doctoral level people. They take a lot of money from the food industry, and I think it puts them in a really uncomfortable situation of conflict of interest. But what they tell me is the society can't survive without industry money. They can't publish the three journals they publish. They can't do this. They can't do that. I question whether that's really true. But even if it is true, they need some kind of firewall to keep the society independent of food industry funding, or nobody's going to believe anything that anybody says.
Yeah.
What worries me about this is that it's destroying the credibility of nutrition science, and I think that's very unfortunate.
But don't scientists have a responsibility here? You know, I know scientists that have, while they were not aligned with the specific industry, have published studies that were favorable to an industry, and then shortly thereafter you see them actually working for some of those companies. Don't scientists have some of the responsibility to bear here?
They do, but they're under enormous pressure to get grants for their work. And if the government isn't providing grants and foundations aren't providing grants and there's very little independent money to fund research for investigator-initiated projects, they've got jobs to keep and families to support and other kinds of things. You know, it's very, very hard for me to come down hard on scientists who are stuck in that situation. I'm in such a privileged position. I get a full salary from my university, and the kind of research that I do doesn't require external funding. Uh-huh. All I need is a library and a computer, and I'm all set. But not everybody is in that position.
Yeah.
So, you know, my university pays for my research. It pays for my blog. I don't have to take ads on the blog. But this is very privileged, and I know it.
I've often dreamt about reaching my audience and asking them to donate dollars to specific research studies so that we can, you know, get real answers for the questions that we're interested in, as opposed to waiting for an industry to fund a study and then us to decide whether or not we want to believe it or not. Why aren't more scientists or those who are at the head of academia, why aren't they coming forth and going to the public? Look, if you want real meaningful science that is unbiased, you will have to fund it yourself. And we have the ability to do that. We have, you know, millions of people in this country that if they all chipped in a dollar, there's the money to fund this study, that study, that study, that all has an ability to affect public health.
It's a really good idea. The only idea that like that that I've ever heard before, I think it's a terrific idea, crowdsource.
Yes.
The only idea that I've heard anything like that is to have some kind of, you know, the food industry wants to fund research. They're not doing it themselves. For them to pool their funds into some common funding, set up a foundation, let the foundation decide, you know, take grant applications and decide which studies deserve funding and so forth. Some mechanism like that might be able to set up a firewall between the companies and the researchers. The papers that are published that are industry funded tend to say things like the funder had no input into the design, conduct, or interpretation of the study or the writing of the paper, but the funder doesn't have to.
Right.
The values are internalized.
Yeah.
And that's what the conflict of interest literature says, is that it's internalized. They don't have to do it. So it's really complicated and a very, very difficult situation. And now that the New York Times has been doing all these revelatory articles about the soda industry and the GMO industry and the organic industry and all of these things, it's really coming to public attention in a big way.
You know, what about this notion about there's a lot of research that is funded but never gets published, and it never gets published, so we don't know if the reason it didn't get published is because the outcomes were not desirable by those who funded it, or that the scientists knows that the outcomes were not going to be favorable and they didn't want to get on the bad side of an industry, because let's face it, that puts you nowhere. What about making everything available? We have all these open access journals now. Why not make everything available come hell or high water? Make it mandatory that if you do a study, whatever the outcome is, it's going to be published. If it's not published in the journal that you want to get it in, it's going to be published somewhere else.
Well, that's a really important point, and the journal, and I know that the journals are talking about this. You know, another potential source of bias is that the journals don't take negative studies because mm-hmm. they're not interesting. You know, you did the study, it didn't find anything, so let's not publish it. But I've been seeing a lot of talk about that lately, as there has been more and more fraud in science generally, not necessarily in food and nutrition science, but in science generally. And the journals are trying to figure out what to do about exposing the fraud, catching it before they publish the papers. I mean, it's just a really turbulent time right now. and everybody is trying to figure out what to do about it.
I want to take our last commercial break, and when we come back, I want to talk about soda taxes and soda caps and why, what your opinions are of them. Can they work, and why they haven't in some instances? We're talking with Dr. Marion Nestle. We're talking about her new book called Soda Politics, but it really plays into the politics of everything today that big industry tries to feed us, no pun intended. And it's important for people to be aware that industry-funded research may not be real research. The outcomes may not be really what's going on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Best in real world, no nonsense, result producing and effective strength training, muscle building, and physical culture information. Read Brooks Cubic's books and courses. Don't delay. Sprint on over to brookscubic.com and choose from more than a dozen of the best books and courses on the market. Brooks Cubic's training advice has been building strength, transforming physiques, and changing lives for more than 25 years. If you prefer ebooks, look for Brooks Cubic's best-selling courses at Amazon's Kindle bookstore. Show your support for Physical Culture Radio by going to brookscubic.com right now.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high protein potato chips with 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
The secret word is resveratrol. Email that in to onair@superhumanradio.com to be entered for this week's secret word contest. And good luck.
The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced PhytoForm. PhytoForm has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing. Prime Nutrition is proud to present Max HP, their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date, now available in 2 great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dyes. Increasing blood flow to heighten anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high-performance athletes. Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today. Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest protein bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Take it back. If you've ever suffered a hamstring injury and don't want to re-injure yourself, or you want to avoid ever having a hamstring injury, the next interview is going to be talking about angle of peak torque. Is this the reason why hamstring injuries occur? You're going to stay tuned for that. Right now we're talking with Dr. Marion Nestle about her book, Soda Politics. It's at SuperHumanRadio.com. So, Dr. Nestle, soda tax, I'm always skeptical about these taxes because I find that these taxes don't necessarily have an impact on the things that they want, which is discouraging people and or creating a pool of money to help educate people. What about soda taxes?
Well, they're a tool for education, if nothing else. Soda taxes have passed once in Berkeley, California, which did this excellent framing device in community organizing. And now the question is it reducing soda consumption? And that's a difficult thing to do in Berkeley because they never consumed much soda anyway. So it's going to be very, very hard to demonstrate a significant change. However, the soda tax is generating $100,000 a month, which is being used for child social work and health programs, and that's exactly what the tax was intended to do, was to shore up the social service programs for kids, and that's what the community wanted, and that's what they're getting, and that seems to me to be a good thing.
What about Mexico? Didn't Mexico, A, create a soda tax, and B, take all soda vending machines out of schools?
I'm not sure about the taking vending machines out of schools, but they, it's funny that you mention it because I've just been sent, just in this afternoon's mail, a paper from the Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health on a case study of Mexico, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet to see what it is that's actually happening. The tax went into effect in the early part of this year, and there's been quite a bit of analytical work done to try to figure out what's going on with it. It looks like sales are down, but you don't know whether that's due to a secular trend or due to the tax itself. But what's clear is that the soda industry did some fairly clever things in opposition. One was they reduced the price of sodas in rural areas to offset the tax.
Right.
I've heard some stories that what the funds were going to go to were to try to do something about cleaning up Mexico's water supply, particularly in schools. And whether that's happening or not, I don't know. So I'm eager to read this. As I said, it just came in about a half hour ago, and I haven't had a chance to look at it.
Very cool. What about diet sodas? I mean, have diet soda sales picked up because people feel like, look, I enjoy my soda, and I understand the problem with consuming excess sugar, so I'll just switch to diet soda.
Well, actually, diet sodas are down, too, and that's because the word is out that the chemicals in diet soda aren't good for you, whether
right.
that's correct, incorrect, whatever, I can't possibly say because I just don't think they've been studied enough. I don't like the taste of diet sodas, so I never touch them. But their sales are down significantly. What is up is water.
So if you had to look futuristically forward, where do you see the soda, assuming that the trends keep continuing the way they are, more and more people abandon sodas of all types, sugar sweetened or non-sugar sweetened sodas, and the sugar and the soda industry starts to continue to shrink and shrink and shrink, what does the soda industry do to stay alive? Aside from funding nonsense studies, let's say people don't buy into the studies, they continue on the path, people continue on the path that they're going now.
Well, they do two things. Coca-Cola's profits were up last year, and that was a gain attributed to two factors. The first was they increased their marketing, and they increased their marketing of Coca-Cola, just Coca-Cola, not all those other drinks, just Coca-Cola in the United States, from about $200 to about $270 million between 2013 and 2014. And much of that marketing went to market the 7.5-ounce cans and bottles, where sales are booming. So sales are doing really well in the smaller sizes. And that seems to me to be a step forward. I mean, no nobody cares about an occasional small soda. It's the 20 ounce and the 30 ounce and the 64 ounce that people are worried about. It's what you get in a movie theater that everybody's worried about. So one possibility is that they're going to, and they're making money on the smaller drinks because they're charging more for them. And so you're paying almost as much for the smaller one as you're paying for the larger ones, and yet they're selling. Also, they sell them in bulk, so you have to buy six or eight at a time or however they're being marketed. So they're looking for drinks that people will be willing to pay for that will make up for the gap in sugar-sweetened beverages. I mean, if you talk to people who work in the soda industry, they all talk about how in favor of public health they are, and they want to be part of the solution, not the problem. And if you take that at face value, they're left with very few choices.
Yeah. My concern is that when you give people smaller sizes, that, you know, when the food industry went to the 100 calorie bag, people just had three or four of them. The idea was to have just one. But instead they go, oh, it's only 100 calories, so I can have two or three. I can eat more. And my fear is that people will just double up and triple up on their sodas, and they'll still end up at that 20 ounces
You have to specify which people you're talking about. I mean, one of the big lessons from the research that I did on this book is that consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages is class-based, and that people who are educated, who have money, have stopped drinking these things, and poor people who don't have money and not much education are the prime target for marketing and the people who are drinking the most of this, young men, particularly young men of color. So the soda industry knows this, and it's putting most of its marketing efforts into places where it thinks it will do the most good. But people who know better and are concerned about health and have the money to buy the kind of food that they want are the ones who are drinking less soda. The more education you have, the less soda you drink.
Do the soda trends?
A very clear correlation, by the way.
Do the soda trends follow the tobacco use trends? Are they similar?
Yes, very similar. In fact, a lot about sodas are similar to the situation in tobacco or any other company marketing an unhealthful product. Now, let me say right now that sodas are not as unhealthful as tobacco.
Right.
But the principles are the same. And actually, sodas are more complicated because if you have a soda once in a while, it's no big deal, whereas you should never smoke cigarettes.
Right.
But the marketing issues are the same, and the soda industry follows the tobacco industry playbook in the kind of marketing that it does and in the dealing with public relations and in the funding of science, the criticizing of science, the fighting of critics, the lobbying, and the support of community groups, which is what one of the things the New York Times revealed was the extraordinary support of community groups, and Coca-Cola, as part of its transparency initiative, has released the names of the groups that it funds. It's pretty staggering. There are a lot. If you're interested in taking money from a soda company, boy, and you're not getting it, it's amazing, because what I couldn't believe was how small some of these organizations were. And yet the money is distributed very, very widely. And, of course, what that does is buy silence,
right,
if nothing else.
Right. Great. It's always great to have you on the show. I know that you're in great demand and your schedule is very, very tight. And I think this is an important discussion that we have, because I think that just exposing the fact that the soda industry and the tobacco industry are similar in the way that they market and who they market to kind of makes them, a little more tawdry, makes them a little bit more of a villain. And they're not that wonderful, happy, you know. I remember I'd like to buy the world a Coke campaign when I was a kid in the 70s, you know, and everything was good and happy. And now we have private labeling of names on sodas to get kids more involved. I mean, it's very, very sad. And it's very sad, the particular portion of our population that succumbs to this. It's very, very sad to me. So.
Well, you know, I came away from Coca-Cola World thinking that it's a schizophrenic company, that it's a company in which the people who work there think that they're part of this love and happiness kind of company, and yet behind the scenes, their marketers are doing all these things just to make sure that Coke is sold. They're a publicly traded company. They have to sell product. They have to increase the product that they're selling every quarter in order to satisfy Wall Street and their investors. And they're under tremendous pressure to do that. That's a problem.
Absolutely. Dr. Nestle, thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hi. So there you have it, the discussion about soda. I'm sure that the majority of this audience does not drink soda or allow their children to drink soda except the occasional soda. But getting the rest of the population to get that message is a challenge. It's kind of sad to think that the economically underserved, less educated people don't care about their health. That is the notion. I mean, it really is very, very sad to me to even say those words, because it's like, surely everybody wants to live longer and be healthier. So I don't know that they don't care about their health as much as they just give in and succumb to, they're more probably the type that would succumb to the message of soda and not fight it off. But it is a sad discussion. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about hamstring injuries, something near and dear to my heart after my hamstring injury of a couple years ago. Was it the angle that my hips and knees were at that caused my hamstring injury and not necessarily the weight that I was lifting off the ground? This is going to be an interesting discussion. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
At RUI-products.com, we offer the most accurately dosed high-quality peptides and research chemicals for all your laboratory needs. RUI-products.com is one of the oldest names in the business. Find out why the scientific community trusts RUI-products.com to provide the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SUPER15 and get 15% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best. RUI-products.com. Do you want to take tennis lessons? You don't have to wear white or join a country club anymore. Play your court sends top-rated instructors to your local court, so you can take tennis lessons right in your neighborhood. Visit playyourcourt.com/superhuman to choose an instructor near you and receive $10 off your first lesson or lesson package. If you have questions, call 301-575-6112 and be sure to mention Superhuman Radio to receive your first lesson discount. playyourcourt.com. Finally, a better way to take tennis lessons.
The secret word is resveratrol. Email that in to onair@superhumanradio.com to be entered for this week's Secret Word Contest. And good luck.
If you take curcumin, you need to pay attention. The best curcumin on earth is metacurcumin. Metacurcumin is up to 277 times more bioavailable and absorbs over 6 times faster than standard curcumin supplements. Metacurcumin even outperforms those supposedly high-performance curcumin products. There's only one metacurcumin by Rev Genetics. You could save 20% off metacurcumin by clicking the banner ad at superhumanradio.com and use Superhuman Curcumin at checkout. If you want to help stop inflammation in its tracks, you need Metacurcumin by Rev Genetics today.
At RUI-products.com, we offer the most accurately dosed high-quality peptides and research chemicals for all your laboratory needs. RUI-products.com is one of the oldest names in the business. Find out why the scientific community trusts RUI-products.com to provide the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SUPER15 and get 15% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best. RUI-products.com.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high-quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
S-T-E-D-C-E-D.
Внимание, дамы и господа, через несколько секунд выйдут на сцену Шпулеметьер. Слабонервных, беременных и детей просим удалиться из зала. Остальным лечь на пол и задержать дыхание!
Bin ich ziemlich gut drauf, ziemlich schick ansetzen, Hut auf. Rolex tickt, man, seh ich gut aus. Hol mir den Kick, den ich absolut brauch. Hier, yeah. Wieder mein Solo-Ausritt in dem Pose-Outfit. Mach mich Spielnet, mach mich Brett, Fett, Rauch, Shit, Pose, die Freude mit Pose-Ausschnitt. Komm in den Club und genieß den Ausblick. Die Baum schickt und die ist auch schick. Ich seh nur hoch, weil ich jeder ausblick. Meine Frau guckt krass, wenn sie's ausdrückt. Egal, mal ein Ausgang, muss auch mal drin sein, bin kein Hausmann. Auch unbedingt einen Drink, der top dran an die Arschlaber, eine Frau an. Für die Nähe von mich, sieben Mojito. Wenn ein Mal gefällt mir, ist die Tanz aber zum Song von Placebo. Bin blau, die Dame Tito.
Oh, hübsches Ding, ich versteck mein Ehering. In der Captain's Pen, gib mir noch ein Ohrenring. Oh, hübsches Ding, du bist Ding. Ich bin King, wenn ich dich sehe, muss ich singen.
Wir sind blau, wir sind spitz. Zu Hause sitzt die Frau mit Kids. Im Augenblick bekämpfe ich den Wunsch, der mir sehen kann in meinen Augenblitz. Alter, krasse Wort, sie da glas es aus und es heißt darauf loszulegen. Zwei gewinnen, bitte weiter drinks, siehst mich mein Ding, versuch's mir einzureden. Löcher dich, ich blätter mich weg, mag lieber hau raus, was in deinem Fest ansteckt. Ich saug's aus, weil's mich vergessen ist. Meine Gedanken sind besessen von Sex. Sieben offensiver vom Mann, doch ich bin besoffen, schiele die Hand kurz darauf. Liegt mein Kopf neben der Toilette, hätte nie gewettet, das Kotzen meine Ehe rettet.
Oh, du hübsches Ding, ich versteck mein Ding.
Well, it looks like we don't have a last interview after all. In his defense, he's in Australia, so probably 3 o'clock in the morning there. We try to get guests on from Australia all the time, but it's just impossible, and I do not pre-tape interviews. I just don't. I can't do it. I can't pre-tape interviews. I don't have the time to edit the interview and drop it in. This is live radio. So maybe we need to stop inviting guests from Australia, because it seems like this happens whenever we do. It's unfortunate. I really wanted to do this interview for my own personal edification about hamstring injury. I guess we could try to rebook it. But I guess we're going to end the show there. But we do have fantastic shows the rest of the week, and these are all inside the United States, so I feel fairly confident that the guests will be here. Let me go over some of these with you, because they are pretty good. Of course, tomorrow we have the Blueprint Power Hour. Then low carb versus high carb low carb versus low fat diets on cardiovascular disease risk markers in obese adults. Science for Humans Wednesday morning. Then 4 gut bacteria that decrease asthma risk in infants. This is an important discussion. Asthma is on at all-time high. The more we learn about microbiome dysbioses, the assaults by things like glyphosate, we know that mother's breast milk has glyphosate in it. We're starting to learn more about these diseases that are associated with gut bacteria, which equals immune system function. So that's going to be an interesting one. Second hour of Wednesday, The Rise of Superman. I'm reading this book by Stephen Kotler. It's an amazing book. We're going to talk about it because it will affect every area of your life, I promise you. Of course, Thursday morning, we start out with Physical Culture Radio. Second hour, resveratrol and Alzheimer's disease. Some new research that shows that resveratrol can prevent Alzheimer's disease and possibly even reverse it in some instances. We're going to talk about that. And then, of course, this Friday, Casual Friday. Unfortunately, I have to end the show now because I don't have another guest and I really don't have anything else to talk about. So we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening today.